Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On previous shows, I've explored the issues around the 28 redacted pages from the Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11. This was released in December of 2002. I've also looked at the two co-chairs of that inquiry, Senator Bob Graham and Congressman Porter Goss. Senator Bob Graham from Florida has been pushing from very early on to declassify the 28 redacted pages from this inquiry. And there's a new movement in Congress to declassify these pages. It's led by Congressman Walter Jones from North Carolina and Stephen Lynch from Massachusetts. And Congressman Tom Massey is also involved in it. On Friday, January 9th, at the same time the terrorist attacks in France were playing out, they held a press conference to discuss these 28 redacted pages and the bill they hope to introduce in the new 114th Congress to declassify these 28 pages. The number of the bill hasn't been designated yet. The old version in the last Congress was H.R. 428. So they held this press conference in Washington, D.C., and I'm going to share with you today some clips from that event. After listening to it, I'm more convinced than ever that it's an attempt to keep the official narrative in place and blame the Saudis for their financial support of the alleged 19 hijackers, while avoiding any look at U.S. or other countries' involvement in 9/11, of which there's ample evidence. But you can listen to this and see what you think. So here's Senator Bob Graham's speech from this press conference on January 9th concerning these 28 redacted pages.
Thank you very much, and I too want to thank Walter and Steve, Congressman Jones and Lynch, for their leadership in bringing this matter to the attention of the Congress. I want to thank the family members who have been, without question, the most influential force in all of the changes that have occurred as a result of 9/11 and will be the most significant force in terms of convincing the president that it is time to give the American people the truth. Needless to say, my remarks that I will spouse this morning are considerably different than they would have been but for events in Paris this morning, which in my judgment bring this matter into its proper focus. But first, a little background. After 9/11, it was clear that the Congress was going to be called upon to conduct some form of an inquiry as to what happened. The decision by the leadership was to combine the intelligence committees of the House and the Senate into a single body for the first time in the history of the Congress that had occurred for purposes of carrying out this inquiry. The inquiry took the year of 2002. It included interviewing hundreds of witnesses, tens of thousands of pages of documentation, leading up to an over 800-page report, which was submitted in December of 2002. Some 6 months later, the declassified version emerged, and we were shocked to see that an important chapter in the report had not been redacted. That is, as Congressman Lynch and Congressman Jones said, a word or a phrase here or there, but an entire chapter. Since that chapter continues to be classified, none of us can talk about it in public. But I think it's fair to say that it is a central chapter in terms of understanding who was the support network that allowed 9/11 to occur. When we saw that this chapter had been eliminated, there was an immediate outcry. Senator Dick Shelby, Republican from Alabama, who had been the chair and was at that time the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I issued a statement to the effect that we were intimately familiar with that chapter. We considered it to have no adverse effect on national security, that it was important to the overall understanding of 9/11, and it should be released. We have subsequently been joined in that by others who were involved, including the chairman of the House Committee, Porter Goss, who wishes that he could have been here today to participate as well. And subsequently, the Citizen 9/11 Commission's two co-chairs, Lee Hamilton and Tom Kane, have also advocated that these 28 pages be released. Shortly after the declassification process ended, a letter was prepared, signed by almost half of the membership of the United States Senate, bipartisan, including Senator Joe Biden of Delaware, Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, and Senator Clinton of New York, all calling upon President Bush to release the 28 pages. What have been the consequences of this refusal to release the pages? And let me say, while the 28 pages are maybe the most important and the most prominent, they are by no means the only example of where information that is important to understanding the full extent of 9/11 have also been withheld from the American people. So the comments I'm going to make are specifically about the 28 pages, but more generally about a pattern of cover-up that for 12 years has kept the American people from a full understanding of the most horrific attack against the United States in its history. The consequences, in my judgment, are three. One is a denial of the truth. A core question in 9/11 is, did these 19 people act alone, or did they have a network of support which facilitated their ability to carry out a very complex plot? No one who has looked closely at the facts, including the individuals that I just named, have come to a conclusion other than that it is highly improbable that the 19 people could have acted alone. Yet the official position of the United States government has been that they did act alone and that there is no necessity for further inquiry into the question of whether there was a support network. We're now in the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, and we've had a national history classroom over the past few years as incidents that were consistent with a date in the current era coincided with a date during that war. One of the pieces of information that we have learned, at least I have learned, is that President Lincoln had a policy throughout the war that every message that came into the government, specifically into the State Department, was a matter of public record on a daily basis. His feeling was that if the support of the American people were going to be maintained in a war, which was increasingly bloody, many loss of lives and loss of treasure, that it took the confidence of the American people that their government was conducting itself in an appropriate manner and that the key to that confidence was disclosure. I wish we applied the Lincoln-esque standard to what happened in 9/11. The second issue is the issue of justice. Some 3,000 members of the families who were lost on 9/11 have been trying for years to get justice through our system for the losses that they have suffered. The position of the United States government has been to protect Saudi Arabia. At virtually every step of the judicial process, when the United States government was called upon to take a position, it has been a position adverse to the interest of United States citizens seeking justice and protective of the government, which, in my judgment, was the most responsible for that network of support. Again, an example from the Civil War. The British had signed a neutrality agreement with the United States that they would not be involved in the Civil War. It was found out subsequently that, in fact, their shipyards had been building military vessels for the Confederacy. After the war ended, the United States didn't forget. It did not walk away from the negative effects of Britain's perfidy. Rather, it pursued it and finally secured recognition of what the British had done and some compensation for the consequences of their action. What a difference between the way this country saw itself as a proudful defender of justice for its citizens and what we are experiencing today. The third consequence is the issue of national security. And frequently those who have defended non-disclosure have said, this cannot be made available to the American people because it will be adverse to our national security. It will affect methods and sources of information or other information that is inappropriate to be made publicly known. As the two congressmen have just said, they both read the report, not 12 years ago as I participated in writing the report, but they have read it recently and have both come to the same conclusion that we did a dozen years ago, that there is no threat to national security in disclosure. I'm going to make the case today that there's a threat to national security by non-disclosure, and we saw another chapter of that today in Paris. Here are some facts. The Saudis know what they did. They are not persons who are unaware of the consequences of their government's action. Second, the Saudis know that we know what they did. Somebody in the federal government has read these 28 pages. Someone in the federal government has read all the other documents that have been covered up so far. And the Saudis know that. What would you think the Saudis' position would be if they knew what they had done, they knew what the United States knew what they had done, and they also observed that the United States had taken a position of either passivity or actual hostility to letting those facts be known? What would the Saudi government do in that circumstance, which is precisely where they have been for more than a decade? Well, one, they have continued, maybe accelerated, their support for one of the most extreme forms of Islam, Wahhabism, throughout the world, particularly in the Middle East. And second, they have supported their religious fervor with financial and other forms of support of the institutions which were going to carry out those extreme forms of Islam. Those institutions have included mosques, madrasas, and military. Al-Qaeda was a creature of Saudi Arabia. The regional groups such as Al-Shabaab have been largely creatures of Saudi Arabia. And now ISIS is the latest creature. Yes, I hope and I trust that the United States will crush ISIS. But if we think that is the definition of victory, we are being very naive. ISIS is a consequence, not a cause. It is a consequence of the spread of extremism, largely by Saudi Arabia. And if it is crushed, there will be another institution established, financed, supported to carry on the cause. So the consequences of our passivity to Saudi Arabia have been that we have tolerated this succession of institutions, violent, extremely hurtful to the region of the Middle East, and a threat to the world, as we saw this morning in Paris. So I conclude by saying this is a very important issue. It may seem stale to some, but it is as current as the headlines that we will read today. It is an issue that goes to the core of the United States' contract with its people, that the people would give the government the credibility and support to govern. The government would give the people the information upon which they can make good judgments as to the appropriateness of governmental action. It's as fundamental as justice to our people who have suffered so by this evil union of extremism and a very powerful nation state. And it is the security of the people of the United States of America. So I again thank the congressmen for their leadership. I hope that they will soon be joined by a rising tide of other members of Congress who recognize the importance of this issue. And then finally, that the President of the United States will declare that he is going to adopt the Lincoln-esque standard of full disclosure and rely on the intelligence and judgment and patriotism of the American people to decide what the appropriate course of action should be. Thank you.
So that was Senator Bob Graham of Florida talking about the need to release the 28 redacted pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11 that was released in December of 2002. I do agree with him that there's a cover-up going on, and also that it was highly improbable that the 19 alleged hijackers could have been able to act alone to pull off 9/11. Of course, I don't think they were involved at all, except for as patsies, and then only some of them, because we know that many of them are still alive after 9/11. And I agree that our government should follow the Lincoln-esque standards of full transparency that he talked about. And I agree that our government doesn't appear to be concerned for its own citizens. And instead, it seems like it's covering up and protecting other countries, and not just Saudi Arabia, in my mind. And I think it's also protecting and supporting and creating the alleged terrorists. And it doesn't do this alone. Of course, it does it with the support of these other countries in the Middle East. Now, and I'm no big fan of Saudi Arabia. I mean, at least the royal family, the government, the Saudi people, I'm sure are probably pretty nice, just like most people around the world. So when he says that Al-Qaeda was a creature of Saudi Arabia, I'd like to remind him that it was the CIA that created Al-Qaeda in the 1980s to confront the Russians in Afghanistan. And all the evidence shows that we never lost those ties. So there's ample evidence that the U.S. and its allies in the Middle East were involved in the creation of ISIS and in its continuing support. This is not new behavior. Just look up Operation Gladio and the terrorist attacks in Europe in the 1960s and 70s. The press conference was attended by a few 9/11 victims' family members and members of the press and the public. Here's one question that I wanted to share with you.
Carl Golliman, JFKVigil.com. I'm a retired U.S. Customs agent. In the fall of 2001, myself and many other agents were assigned to Fresh Kills Landfill, where the rubble of World Trade Center 7 was brought, and we were tasked with sifting through WTC-7, the 47-story third tower that collapsed that day, and calling out computer components that other agencies didn't want left in the landfill. And I can just testify from my experience as an investigator that those three towers were not brought down solely by two airplanes and their jet fuel, that there is abundant evidence of controlled demolition of those three towers. And my question is whether these 28 pages will point at all towards that reality and the potential of true false flag terrorism in this event.
Senator, why don't you answer that? I've got an answer.
My answer is no.
That's it. The 28 pages does not deal with that issue at all.
And here's another question and answer that I wanted to share with you. In this case, the congressman's response reveals a really optimistic view of our corporate media and their ability to do their job.
Jack Larson, I am the basictruth.com. My question is, I heard before that there was multiple foreign governments that could be actually implicated in the pages. Is it just totally Saudi Arabia, or is there other active governments that could be involved?
I personally think that the report speaks for itself. And there's one thing that needs to be said here. Once these 28 pages are released, the press will do their job. We've got some smart folks out there on the part of the press. They will investigate this, and there'll be a collective debate and discussion about the implications of these 28 pages. And your question and others will be answered. That's the whole process here. We'll do a deep dive on this collectively, with the full focus of transparency that it deserves. And I think there will be, you know, I'll learn from the debate. Even though I've read the 28 pages, I'm sure there'll be other sets of eyes that will look at that same 28 pages and come up with things that I did not immediately recognize. So, you know, I think all of this is an important understanding process, and that transparency from all these different angles will really enlighten our understanding of this whole terrible and tragic event.
So think about that for a minute. Why is it okay to reveal the Saudi involvement identified in these 28 redacted and classified pages, but not okay to reveal if other countries were also involved? That has me scratching my head. I just can't quite figure that out. The full press conference lasted about 55 minutes, To see and hear the full video of the event, you can go to YouTube, and once on the site, search for 28 Redacted Pages Press Conference Bob Graham, and you should come to it. And now I want to share with you an article that appeared in the New York Times on January 4th, 2015, called Conspiracy Theorists Have Suspicious and Sometimes Paranoid Natures. And it's by Cass Sunstein. And I don't know exactly why, but I find this guy somewhat amusing. Anyway, here's how the New York Times describes him. Cass R. Sunstein, the Robert Walmsley University professor at Harvard Law School, is a former administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs and is the author of Conspiracy Theories and Other Dangerous Ideas, and most recently, Wiser, co-authored with Reed Hasty. And now here's the article. We'll see if you find it as amusing as I do. And here goes. A lot of conspiracy theorists are neither ignorant nor ill-educated. On the contrary, they can be spectacularly well-informed, at least on the topics that interest them. Try arguing with one. They probably know a lot more than you do. Why, then, do they accept theories that are patently inconsistent with reality? One reason involves their suspicious and, in some cases, paranoid natures. Want to know whether your neighbors will accept a particular conspiracy theory? Just ask them what they think about other conspiracy theories. Those who insist that the Apollo moon landings were faked are more likely to believe that the United States caused the 9/11 attacks. Horrible events can make people who are scared and angry look for someone to blame. In fact, people who embrace one conspiracy theory are also inclined to embrace another conspiracy theory that cannot simultaneously be true. In one study, people who said they believed that Osama bin Laden is alive and well were more likely to believe that he was dead before U.S. forces invaded his compound. The belief in a more central idea that authorities are engaged in deceptive cover-ups supports any number of skeptical theories, even leading suspicious individuals to disregard contradictions between them. But conspiracy theories are not only a product of people's natures. Social conditions matter. Horrible events, economic collapse, an assassination, a grievous loss of some kind can make people who are scared and angry look for someone to blame, not least to assert a kind of mastery of the circumstances. The human mind is drawn to think that whenever something bad has happened, it's because someone bad wanted it to happen. Conspiracy theories are especially likely to spread within isolated communities and social networks, including those online. Most people do not know the causes of horrible events, and so we tend to rely on those we trust. If a few people within a network, call them conspiracy entrepreneurs, point to an alleged conspiracy, others within that network might well follow them. After a while, people can become committed to that belief and treat official denials as yet additional evidence of conspiracy, leading to the conspiracist's triumphant question, why would they deny it if it weren't true? And that's the end of the article. As many of you may already know, when Cass Sunstein worked for the Obama administration, he discussed cognitively infiltrating the 9/11 truth movement. David Ray Griffin wrote a book in response to this and called it Cognitive Infiltration. It's a short, clever, and I thought humorous read. If you haven't already read it, I would recommend it. And again, it's called Cognitive Infiltration by David Ray Griffin. It's interesting to me that Cass Sunstein's article came out the same week that the Boston Marathon bombing trial began and that the Paris shootings occurred and a press conference was held on the 28 redacted pages and openly talked about the Saudi involvement in 9/11, even though it's classified, but wouldn't reveal anything else because, well, it's classified information. What a way to kick off the new year. But I'm probably just being paranoid. So let's take a closer look at Cass Sunstein's article. First, I have to say that I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist. The term is used to discredit anyone who challenges the official account of, in this case, 9/11. It's a total propaganda term. So having said that, back to Sunstein's article, he's a smart guy. I mean, he's been at Harvard Law School. So his title, Conspiracy Theorists Have Suspicious and Sometimes Paranoid Natures, is curious to me because surely he gets that the official account of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory. So is he saying that the government is suspicious and sometimes has a paranoid nature? Or did he just choose to ignore the fact that the official account of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory? Well, that question aside, in the first paragraph, he states that, quote, conspiracy theorists can be spectacularly well-informed. They probably know a lot more than you do, he says. Of course, here he assumes that all of the readers don't question the government on 9/11 or any other issue. And then he asks why, if the conspiracy theorists are so well-informed, he says we even know more than he does on, say, 9/11, why do we hold theories that are inconsistent with reality? And I was just wondering, did it ever occur to him, again, he's a smart guy, that if we know more than he does on the subject, that maybe he's the one with the beliefs that are not consistent with reality? Well, that was just a thought I had. Also, I believed the official account of 9/11 for about the first year. So apparently, I was not suspicious and did not have a paranoid nature. But once the evidence convinced me that I was being lied to about 9/11, and I started to question the government account, did I suddenly become suspicious and paranoid? I mean, how does that work? There's a lot more that I could pick at in this article, but for the sake of time, I'll just do one more. He states that people who believe in, quote, conspiracy theories tend to believe in other, quote, conspiracies as well. And I have to say that he's probably onto something here, but not for the same reasons that he thinks. Because once you learn about how, for example, you've been lied to about 9/11 and about other false flag events and about some of the similarities, you can see the same patterns happening in other events. For example, the omissions and distortions of the corporate media. And that brings me to the recent shootings in France. I watched a mainstream TV news show with a very popular news guy cover the alleged shooting of the police officer in Paris by the alleged terrorists before they fled in the getaway car. They showed only part of the video, so you could see the gunman head toward the policeman, ready to fire, and you could see the cop lying on the ground. The gunman's ready to shoot at him on the sidewalk, and then the news guy says, "We're not going to show you the next part because it's too gruesome." And so they cut back to the guys running away in their getaway car. Later, I saw the full video of this same scene online, and it turns out the gunman shoots at the sidewalk past the police officer, doesn't actually hit the police officer, so there was no blood, no gruesome scene that the corporate media had to censor. What they had to censor was the fact that the gunman didn't actually hit the cop. Now, why they have to censor that is another question. But you see this lie, this cover-up of the real evidence, or lack of it, by the corporate media, and any thinking person has to begin to question what we're being told. I've seen the corporate media omit and distort the news many times over since 2001, but it still always shocks me just how complicit they are in disseminating the government propaganda. If you want to learn more about the inconsistencies of what we're being told about the Paris shootings, the website globalresearch.ca has lots of articles by many researchers and journalists. And again, it's globalresearch.ca. But be careful. If you learn more about the Paris shootings than Cass Sunstein knows, you could be considered a conspiracy theorist and therefore suspicious and paranoid. 9/11 Wake Up Call is produced at the University of Hartford, WWUH 91.3 FM, and airs Wednesdays at noon and again at 8 p.m. It also airs on WESU at Wesleyan University in Middletown on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. And the shows are archived at radioforall.net. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.